Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento, Sacramento, Sacramento,
Sacramento. Turner Sparks just got married and has moved home to America after 12 years living in China. Sir Michael Ira Kaplan has two kids, a wife, a job, and has spent his entire life in the USA. Neither one can figure their country out. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 68. My name's Turner Sparks in Hong Kong.
I am Michael Kaplan in New York City.
You can find me at Turner B. Sparks on Twitter. You can find Kaplan at K-A-P, Cap in America. This week, I'm in Hong Kong, Cap's in New York. On the podcast today, we have comedian Paul Johnson, comedian, comedy writer Paul Johnson. Paul used to be a Mormon. When he was a Mormon, he went on a mission to Germany. We're going to find out all about what it's like to go on a mission, to go to Germany, to knock on people's doors in Germany, to ride around on a bicycle in those black and white suits. But Cap, the interview
you know,
we did...
Wait, hold on. Hold on one second. I was like, we got to book James Lipton to find out about being a pimp in Paris, and this is what you bring me?
This is as close as we could get.
You bring me a Mormon in Germany. That sounds way less interesting. But all right, I'll give him a chance.
Cap, before all that though, we gotta say that we recorded this a couple weeks. We recorded this last week, but now I'm on my tour. So look at us. We're doing our intros from abroad. This is the first time we're trying this technology. I hope it works.
Yeah, we're breaking new ground here.
We are breaking
using
new
a thing
ground.
Called a telephone. It's very exciting.
It's very exciting. But before we get to all this, we have a correction to make.
Uh-oh, do you have correction music?
We have correction music. Should we play the Violent Femmes?
Play the Violent Femmes. They won't do it.
Play the correction music.
If we keep telling lies, 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 lies.
All right, so here's what it is, Cap. Last week, Jeremy Kerrigan, great guest.
Yeah.
Came on the pod, but I gotta tell you, I think he knows a little, he knows a lot about a lot, but he's also one of the guys, those guys who knows a little about a lot, and then just dives right into it, very much like I do. Whatever you don't know.
Right, I'm the same way. That's the key to podcasting.
Yeah, you cover it up with bravado, right? Whatever you're unsure of.
Yeah.
And so he's somebody who skates on the edge of truth and lies. And and in this one case, Gary Sparks, accountant to the pod, big-time pod listener, had some pushback. At the very end of the last episode, we were talking about the Water Witch, the guy who went around our neighborhood. I thought he was Indian, but I wasn't sure if it was Native American or Indian from India. Turned out, Gary Sparks came in nothing. He was not Indian at all. He was just some white guy.
He had a tan.
This is an old American tradition, says Gary Sparks, right? And so this goes back, very far back. My dad's great-grandfather used to be able to do this. What they do, walk around.
From a long line of divine water guys.
I do. From water witches is apparently what they're called. So this guy, when my parents were building our house out on this acreage in rural California in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. They got this guy to come out. My dad also said $50. I thought it was $1,000, so I'm the liar on that one.
Wow.
Paid the guy $50.
Well, $50 when you were a kid, though, is a couple $100.
You're right. I think that, yes. A movie was a nickel back then, so.
Yes.
$50. So anyway, this guy comes out, old man something, old man Johnson or something like that. He comes out. He gets a coil, like a metal coil, like a kind of like a rod, but he coils it up, like barbed wire. Think of barbed wire. Puts it into a Y shape, so like a wishbone, right? He grabs one end of each of it. He walks around the neighborhood. The wishbone gets pointed down into the ground, and he says, "This is where you got to build your well." Now, we told this last week. This is where Jeremy Kerrigan said, "Ah, there's water everywhere. That's an old scam." Not true. Those are lies.
Fake news. The libertarians, they're full of their fake news.
Typical libertarian fake news. Listen, this is coming to you from Reason.com. They do it all the time, these libertarians.
Yeah, but you know, he did it with confidence. And, you know, that's the key to, you know, he was really mansplaining to us, and he did a good job of it.
He really was.
I believed him.
So you can't
What do I know about water?
These wells aren't everywhere. My dad said that the county of Eldorado County, they had commissioned all these hotshot, big-time college boys to come out, do all these studies, get these maps out, make some sketches. Yeah. And they said, if you want a well for your county, you got to dig right here. Well, guess what happened? Eldorado County dug, no water. They did it 5 more times, no water. And then Eldorado County wised up. They paid old man Johnson, the same guy, $50. He came out one time, found the water for the whole county of Eldorado.
He's got a gift from above.
He's got
some
a gift.
Some men can find water, some can't.
Now, next
some
piece of fake news.
Water. I'm sure there are women water takers. Yeah.
Next piece of fake news. The story goes on that we have no filter. There's never been a filter on the Sparks family's well. This is just water coming unfiltered straight into our house from the time I was 10 years old, whenever we moved into that house. So I've about
so
product.
So is that raw water? It's raw then?
It's raw water. Yeah.
So billion-dollar idea, why aren't you guys bottling this stuff and selling it to hippies and hipsters and whatever they are who are paying $25 a gallon?
Of course. This is what I was telling Gary Sparks. They're paying $25 a gallon. We've literally gotten it for free my entire life.
Oh, my God. You're sitting on – you're like one of those people who, like, they find oil underneath their home and all of a sudden you're billionaires.
Like black gold, baby. Texas tea.
It's black hole. It's going to change your whole life.
Put
everyone through college.
This is literally a billion-dollar idea. So what we got to do, we got to bottle it. We got to get out to Bonnaroo and sell it to these hippies.
Yeah. You got to. And guess, maybe, yeah. I think you could sell some to Ents. I think Akram will buy some. So.
I think he will with the hot sauce. Ents is a water. It's from the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. And guess who's not getting a taste of it? Jeremy Lyon Kerrigan. So anyway, that's it. But before we get to Lost in America, this weekend, I just finished all my shows in Hong Kong. They were fantastic. Thank you to everyone for coming out. Tonight I will be in Hanoi doing a show. This weekend I have two shows in Bangkok on Friday and Saturday night. And then early next week on January 30th, I'm going to be in Singapore. So check all that stuff out. Plus February 3rd in Shanghai, February 9th in Beijing. That's the whole trip. All right. Should we get to Lost in America?
Yeah. Play the music.
Play the music.
Or was there...
All right, we're back. Cap, you're Lost in America. What's up?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a long 5 days ahead of me. Randy is on a plane as we speak to Paris for work.
Ooh la la.
The apartment I'm recording from looks like a tornado already swept through it because I was just drinking whiskey while the kids are running around like maniacs. I'm home alone, I don't have the energy to enforce.
Wait, how long ago did she leave?
Oh, she left like 2 hours ago. And it was like time for bedtime, and the second they went out the door, she went out the door, they just went like maniacs running around, just started drinking whiskey and watching the Sixers, and I just don't have the energy to I don't have the energy to force bedtimes when I'm by myself.
Wait, do they treat you, like, literally, it's only been 2 hours and it's already pure chaos. Do they treat you like a substitute teacher? Like, they know when she's gone, you're just like, you got nothing
pretty,
on them?
Pretty much. That's basically the exact analogy. It's like, they just, like, have no, it's like, they have no respect. It's like, we're both here, they know that, like, there's a good cop, bad cop. But if it's one of us here, they see it works the other way, right, too. If I'm not here, like, they just run rough. They just go nuts. It's like, they just can't.
You gotta
yeah,
get.
I don't, and especially if it's me.
You gotta get Will Smith.
Yeah, I do need him. But they sense it. Like, I was watching the Sixers game, and they sensed it. Like, I didn't want to pause the games or really enforce the bedtime. They just ran with that. They start playing together like they're best friends. All of a sudden, they're. Anyway, I did rope with them, though. I literally just ignored them until they both were like, I'm tired. I want to go to bed. So it worked out.
Once daddy gets his whiskey, all bets are up.
Yeah, exactly. So, first victory. But I've got other battles to accomplish. For one, Ruby also says to me yesterday, she says she got these scratches on her.
Yeah.
And she says that this boy in her class scratched her. So we said something to the teacher about it. And they basically looked into it and they said that, no, he didn't do anything. Ruby did it to herself. And I just can't believe in this environment, that in this Me Too environment, that I've got Ruby's the one person, this is where the line was drawn.
Time's
so that's
up.
One. So I got, yeah, exactly.
Time
so
is,
I got to have a talk to the school.
Time is
I'm
up.
I'm going to that school tomorrow. And I'm going to do a little talking to them. Or
Kaplan.
I'm going to get one of those Gloria Aldridge or Lisa Bloom on the case.
Yeah, let's get Gloria Aldridge. Listen, I'm as much as – I've been a defender of the boys will be boys defense my whole life, you know. But even that, even someone like me can say that if you're scratching a three-year-old, you blame her? You victim shame? You blame the three-year-old?
Yeah, they said that she had paint on her, and then she scratched it off. And then they said that, yes. And then they said that this boy in question does like to do things to girls, but he's been good lately. And I'm like, oh, red flag, red flag.
That's a complete red flag.
You know.
I mean, it's time we start believing women when they say that they've been attacked, whatever. We can't, this whole thing of just sweeping it under the rug, it's got to go. And I honestly can't believe that at preschools in New York City, they're not believing the girl. That's insane to me.
Yeah, and I think if anything, even if Ruby is telling a little fib here with an active imagination of a three-year-old, this is the time when we have to re-educate the kids if we want to change the world. So even if you've got to teach boys right now, girls are going to say things, you better be on your best behavior at all times. Don't give them anything. And girls have to learn that they're going to be believed from an early age. I'm coming as crazy, as far to the one inside as I can right now, making a stand.
And also,
I have a father of a daughter, as Matt Damon would say.
And here's Cap. Do they? Yeah. Do they know you have a podcast? Do you have a platform? I mean, we can get our listeners on this guy. You know.
No, they don't know, and we're not gonna make them find out because then I don't.
Let's say his name. Let's say his name publicly.
I don't want my kids not getting it. I'm not gonna do that.
And then we'll get a little.
I don't want to get
the pitchforks out, and we'll get a little mob going after him. I'm all for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've got to talk to our lawyers before we get into that. We're going to talk to Blue Shirt. We're going to talk to your manager, Todd, about what, you know, we don't want to, we don't want to come out to public. We don't want to come out to school, but it's good that we have it in the back pocket.
Okay. You back know, pocket. We'll back pocket.
Next time I'm over there, I'll drop the fact that I have a successful podcast with hundreds and hundreds of listeners.
Hey, we're thousands, baby. We got thousands. Come on.
Yeah.
All right, Cap. So anyway, you got your kids. You're lost with your kid. You got 5 days with kids that you don't know how to raise. And you got this teacher. I feel like the teacher is lost in America this week. If the teacher in New York City is unaware of the current climate we're living in, I would say they're more lost than you or I.
Yeah, they're not as lost as the Hawaiian mass texter of a ballistic missile guy. But, you know, they are more lost than us. So that's the good theme of the season.
I would say this teacher is more lost than the ballistic missile guy at this point.
Yeah, and I'm going to be lost in the next 5 days. I know we might not be doing podcasts, but we might have to do some emergency entry or something just to let the listeners know what's going on in the Kaplan estate here.
All right.
As the substitute teacher's in charge, so as they're saying.
Sounds good. All right, Kaplan.
Mr. Kaplan.
Ints is an app.
Yes.
You can get it in the App Store. You can get it at ince.nyc. You can record up to 5-minute voice recordings, audio recordings, music, whatever you want to record, up to 5 minutes. It's a social media platform, so you can tag your friends. You can talk back and forth to people. You can talk to Ikram. You can talk to me. You can talk to Kaplan. You can find us at Lost in America on Ince or Turner Sparks on Ince. We're all there. And Ince has questions for the pod. We'll play them live on the pod. We also, coming soon, Kaplan, here's an announcement. I can't say exactly what it is, but we have a new sponsor coming in.
Ooh.
And it's going to be exciting. Hey. We're not getting rid of Ince. We're not getting rid of Amazon, which right. also you guys got to get to Amazon. And go to lostinamericapod.com. If you're going to shop on Amazon, go to lostinamericapod.com first. Click the advertisement in the top right-hand corner. That'll take you back to Amazon. Do your shopping. So we're not going to get rid of either one of those, but we're adding one more. And then we might have to cut it off because we got so many people who want to get involved.
I think we keep it going. We got big pockets.
Well, if someone wants to get in after this one, they're going to have to pay big bucks. They're going to have to beat what we're getting paid by Amazon and Ince and the new guy.
Yeah, I think we should aim big. Maybe Apple or someone. I see they have a lot of money.
They're bigger than Bezos.
But Amazon. But thank you, Jeff Bezos. You've been a really dear sponsor. We'll never forget you.
Well, you might still be around. He might still be around. All right, Cap. Let's get to – so we recorded this last week. Paul Johnson, this is what we're going to be doing for the next few weeks. I'm on the road. We have a bunch of interviews we'll be playing, but we're going to be doing these intros live from the road. It's exciting. All right, should we get to Paul Johnson?
So wait, so is this the first podcast ever where we're not going to say, bring him in, I see him outside?
I think it might be. Well, it might be.
Making history. Let's cut to Paul. Let's go talk to him.
Cut to Paul. All right, we're back with our guest, Paul Johnson. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing it, man. Paul and I, we talked about this earlier, but we knew each other back at Kung Fu Comedy Club.
Yeah, all the way back. We were both there the same amount of time. We were both in China for like 12 years, but I guess only knew each other the last 3-4 years.
Yeah, were you in Shanghai the whole time?
Yeah.
You were. And what were you doing besides, because you started comedy, when were you doing comedy? We met in like 2013 or something like that, probably?
Yeah, I only did comedy like my last 4 years there, but initially I went over, I was working in business, I ran a manufacturing company, and eventually, you know, we thought about leaving China, but eventually, like, my job kind of wrapped up, but I stuck around and became a writer and comic, just kind of pursued interests. You know, I worked for Time Out. I wrote their back page column. I did that inside job column where I tried people's job for the day, traveled around China.
I was there. Now that I think about it, I was there the first time you did stand-up comedy, from what I know. Because weren't you doing it as a
article? I did it as a column, yeah.
Yeah, you did it.
Like a dare?
Yeah, it was like, do stand-up comedy. How was it? How did it go?
It went really well initially. Like, I had known Andy for a while. I met both Audrey and Andy from Kung Fu Comedy. I wrote a one-act play that was in a festival. It was a comedy, did really well. And afterwards, they're like, it was funny, you should do stand-up. And I just had it in my back pocket for a while as a potential job. Other things canceled. I was like, I'm going to have to do that tonight in order to make deadlines.
Fallback plan. Some people say law school is a fallback.
Like, stand-up comedy is a potential job.
Yeah, so I got up. I did it.
Wait, did you propose the article to Time Out? It was Time Out Shanghai.
Yeah.
Right? Time Out Magazine Shanghai. Did you propose, like, hey, this will be a great... Because you were, as you said, you had that article or that column where you would go to a job for a day and then write about it, right?
Yeah, I'd been doing it for a while already. You know, I was a matchmaker, I was a tailor, I was a locksmith, I joined
very straight different jobs.
One of those lion dance troupes where you get in and you dance around and performed at weddings.
You did that?
Yeah, I did that. I went to Subway driver school.
It sounds like a podcast.
It sounds like you should have it. Yeah.
That could be something else. But I went to Subway driver school, like spent a whole day going and actually got to drive the train.
The train? You can go to school and to drive the train?
No, they shouldn't have let me drive the train, it turns out.
They actually let you drive it in Shanghai?
Yeah.
Like, I always thought they were automatic, which seemed dangerous.
They have drivers. It's the kind of thing where I don't think in America I would have gotten away with driving the train. Not only did they let me drive, but they let my kid drive.
What? Was he really driving?
How old was your kid at the time?
He was maybe, 10?
Yeah, that's no good.
And it was a thing where, you know, Chinese people really love Western kids. I always treated my kids really well.
Family trip.
And so I would take my kid along to all these things because it would open doors. People would be really friendly, and they would give me access that they wouldn't normally.
To see foreign kids. White kids? Whatever.
Yeah, foreign kids. And my son spoke really great Chinese. So not only did he come along to the school, and they had all these simulators where you could pretend drive a train and whatever, but then we got on the actual train. It wasn't with regular passengers, but it was like 60 other trainees. And
they can die. Who cares?
They can die. But yeah, we got on, and my son, actually, when he drove the train, the guy giving him, like instructing him, kind of startled him or something. My son let go of like the handbrake, and everybody went forward, and like people fell down.
Oh, really? Jeez. Yeah, Cap, you got to get Teddy Kaplan out there.
He's got to learn Mandarin, I guess, first, and then I'll.
Well, I don't think he has to learn Mandarin because his son
Were they born in China, your kids, or they were?
No, right before going over.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they both speak really good Chinese.
They grew up speaking Chinese.
Yeah, basically they're 12 years there.
Were you a matchmaker at the same time as you were a locksmith?
I knew Cap was going to ask about the matchmaker.
Because I was just thinking that's a great way to be a matchmaker is if you change the locks on people and they get locked out while they're on a date.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Extend the date, you know?
Well, you know, the locksmith one, that just sounded interesting to me. That was one where I actually felt like I learned something. Like, I could pick basic locks now, two or three different kinds of locks. The matchmaking thing, I don't know that I really learned anything, like being there. You know, in People's Square, the center of Shanghai, they have this marriage market. And Saturday, Sundays, people
Paul's just asking, like, acting like you know that.
I know this. This is a marriage market.
Yeah. I figured Turner knew that.
It's like going, I know that, but yeah, Cap wouldn't know.
But yeah.
It's like Portobello Market Road in London. Every Saturday, you come by and get fixed up.
Yeah, well, you can explain it, Paul.
Yeah, it's usually
grandparents.
It's grandparents and parents, and they will. People actually post all the stats for their kid. And
wait, there's one part you're leaving out, though. The kids don't know about this.
They don't know.
Cap, it would be like your mom and dad going out to... Dr.
This is so Jewish. I can't believe it.
Dr. Bob Kaplan going to Times Square, like Central Park.
Right.
And then writing down all the statistics of your sister.
Is there verified by somebody independent, or is like you can say whatever you want?
No, you can say whatever you want. And then... it's like live Tinder, like, but run by grandparents. So your dad would be out there trying, like, writing down your sister's like height, degree, college degree.
My sister is single, so
her salary. That's why I pick her for example. Her whatever, like everything, right?
Yeah.
And then walk around and meet other grandparents who have sons and try to set them up on dates.
Okay, so the sons are there. They're all and they're like, do they negotiate with each other?
The sons wouldn't be there.
Right, the sons, grandparents. Not their parents, the grandparents?
Grandparents and parents.
Parents and grandparents. Depending upon how desperate
you
are.
The most like aggressive, best negotiator in the family?
Oh, yeah. So what'd you do?
Well, the I was supposed to approach different people, get their stats and whether they were interested in working with the service, but people were more interested in me as a potential husband. Like, they saw me there and they're like, but, you know, are you spoken for? And I'm like, I'm not available, but I'll listen. You know, I'm not going to say no to a really good deal. They're all great negotiators. Yeah, they're promising a certain amount of, like, my daughter makes this amount of money. She owns her own car. We own an apartment. We come from this province. I'm like, yeah, I'm
listening. They guarantee, like, she'll put out or stuff like that?
They don't.
How far do they
but
take
you
this?
Know what I found interesting? There's almost, like, no pictures.
There's no...
this is very old-fashioned.
Which is the only... isn't that, like, the
all
number
really
one
matters.
Criteria?
Yeah.
Not in China. Which I don't mind, you know...
Not with grandparents in China. I would still say with people... when they're dating a 20s and 30s, you still want to know what they look like. Chinese people would want to know what other Chinese people look like.
I would think, they're different than us. I mean,
no.
Did you ever do any sort of, before you're single, online dating or anything with
I was, like, I got, Ye and I met and started dating, like, 3 months before Tinder came out, so I missed the whole thing.
I went on J-Date. I think my mom paid for it. She's like, you're going J-Date. It's the Jewish dating service for those who...
Yeah.
And I went on it when it first, and there was like a girl and a picture, it was like a face picture, seemed nice. It said she was athletic build.
We made
plans for a date, and then I was like on the subway going to work in the morning, and this girl looked so familiar to me. I just like looked at her like I knew her, but I couldn't figure out why. I get to work and I have an email and it's like from the girl I'm supposed to go out with, like, hey, I think I might have seen you.
You got a preview.
She's like, I think I might have just seen you on the subway. And I should say she was rather large.
So no, you say very athletic.
Though. Very athletic. She was athletic the same way, like an offensive lineman. Like she could same old John Runyon was
like
a great
athlete.
She could
athlete. Do 500-pound squats.
Yes. She could be.
That's a complimentary way of saying it.
Yeah, so I did. I thought about it. What's the honorable thing to do here? And I took my time. I drank some coffee and I wrote an email like, no, I don't take that train in the morning. And then I canceled the date separately, not in the same email. I canceled the date later. So I didn't want to hurt her feelings. I didn't want to think she saw me.
Yeah, that's good. But if she's listening, shout out.
Shout out. Maybe she's got in shape.
So what's okay.
Wait,
so
did I have one last question on this. Myrna Spark, did she never get involved when she was visiting you?
To
in the setup thing? Because she's like, that's like her.
MO. Oh, she tried one time, but it was like way, way off. And then at some point, like after, I was probably in my like mid late 20s. She was like, I have a friend in Mexico and they have a daughter. And I'm like, I live in China. And it's literally a world away. So,
all right.
No.
So she should have gone to this market. Anyway. Yeah.
So, okay. So before all of this, what I want to talk to you about specifically was you were Mormon. Are you still Mormon? You're not Mormon.
Not Mormon anymore.
Not Mormon. You grew up Mormon?
Grew up Mormon, yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in both California and Utah. So in Saratoga, kind of the San Jose area until I was 8, and then through high school in Sandy, Utah, just a suburb of Salt Lake.
Okay. So the Mecca.
I've got a lot of Mormons there, I've heard.
Yeah, it's big with Mormons.
That's where that's their Israel or their Jerusalem, right?
Yeah, they water down all the beer.
Well, I guess Jerusalem would be their Jerusalem because they do believe in God, don't they?
They do believe in Jerusalem.
Your opening question is, do they believe in God?
I grew up with a bunch of Mormons. So you went on a mission.
I did.
Yeah. I knew Mormons all growing up, but then I feel like we just lost touch. Like when you grow up and then you go to college and then, you know, it wasn't like best friends. So I didn't reconnect. My friends that did, I did reconnect with or did stay in touch with, were not Mormon anymore by the time I knew them. I mean, by the time like we got out of college. So I want to talk about the missions. You went to Germany?
Yeah, I was in Germany. I was in Dusseldorf, Germany. It's kind of like central Germany.
Is this right after school or is this...
Yeah, immediately after high school. So
after high school?
Yeah, like 2-3 months after. I was just 19.
You go when you're 19, right?
Yeah, they changed it recently. Like, kids will go now. It used to be you leave at 19, but now it's like just immediately after high school.
Didn't Sean Bradley do that?
No, that makes more sense because Sean Bradley went to college for 1 year, and then had to quit basketball for 2 years. I would say that derailed his career.
Oh, he would have been. Yeah,
he would have been Shaq.
Any other scenario, he would have ended up in the 76ers. It would have been great. But
yeah, you know, I think the age thing was, you know, aim towards having them be a little more mature when they went, but it also, like, you lose people to going to college. They
it's
leave
impractical,
and they're like, yeah,
right.
You know, you go for a year, you got a lot of people just kind of like hanging out, like waiting to go and not doing anything for a year. A certain amount of those kids end up not going on a mission.
Right. Or maybe not going back to college.
Well, if you go to college, you're like, why?
No, I think they would go back to college. I think they were more worried about them not going on a mission.
Yeah, because my friend, De'Aaron Roots, he went to San Diego State for a year and then forget about it. You're not going on a mission after your year of partying with co-eds at San Diego State. You know?
That'll destroy all religions.
They're taking weekend trips down to TJ.
Yeah. Well, a lot
and
of
he didn't go. He ended up not going. Well, I mean, I think he was out probably anyway, but.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And I think a lot of the rules, like the programs in Mormonism are geared towards, I don't know if they consciously are this strategic about it, but it's geared towards keeping you in the system. You graduate high school and then you go on a mission. And you learn like a lot of leadership and being involved in the church. You learn a language. They encourage you to go to college. You might go to a church university. While there, you're meeting all other single people, kind of encouraged to get married. And then you get married, you have a kid immediately. And by the time you're like, maybe this isn't the right thing for me,
it's too late.
You're kind of stuck with a kid, a school degree, an alumni association, and church responsibility, and a marriage, and whatever. And yeah, I think that's why, I mean, people still leave, but it increases the rate of people staying.
It's a good way to keep you in. So what did you, when you went right out of high school to Germany. Did you go with anyone you know? Or is it like, you just go by yourself and you meet people when you get there?
Yeah, didn't know anybody. The way the church works, you say that you are interested in going. You have to pass like some interviews. You say that if you had any language experience or connection to an area, but they pick. They don't give you...
Did you have a choice? I think Germany your first choice, or was it like...
I did want to go to Germany. I studied German in school, And Germany is actually one of the much more difficult missions. I didn't really know that at the time, but it is a cool place to live. A lot of people where the church is growing very quickly is in South America and Africa. A lot of people interested there. Germany, not so much.
It's easier missionary work.
Why are they not interested?
Well, there tends to be a correlation between the more educated and the wealthier you are, the less interested you are in religion. I won't say that. Yeah, there, and it's also a cultural thing. Like, Germans are not that friendly as far as, like, sharing their church and other things with people. Like, so people in South America, they have more a sense of community, really connected to their families, big families. So if one person joins, it means, like, 15 people are going to join.
15 for the price of one.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, so
anybody starting any sort of cult or anything, South America,
it's not a cult.
No, I just mean in general. If you want to sell something, South America is way better than Germany.
Yeah, Germans.
No, Mormonism works well there as well as multi-level marketing.
Yeah,
no, because Dirk Nowitzki was like MVP.
So if you want to sell oils, go to South America.
Yeah, they didn't even get into basketball, and Dirk Nowitzki is like the best player in the NBA.
Yeah,
they barely pay attention because they never cared before.
Yeah,
so they're not going to care about Mormons, right?
I guess not. Like his David's, but I agree.
So
yeah, you get a call. You say you're told to show up at a certain date at the Missionary Training Center, where there's like a 2-month intensive language training.
Okay.
And also like doctrine training of what you're going to be teaching. And that's part like what the specific doctrines of the church are, as well as like kind of, I would say, kind of marketing or demographic training, like salesmanship and how to get along with people, meet people.
Oh, that's interesting. What do they teach you? What sales techniques do they teach?
Well, a lot of it is, basic stuff about meeting people, but the most effective ways of like where you are probably going to find people who are going to be interested in religion. They'll give like basic tips where it's like, generally, when people get to be adults, your thinking is pretty fixed after a certain age. And as you get older, the most likely time for you to change and find like a religious experience is going to be through some sort of traumatic or life-altering experience.
Wow, this is so cutthroat. No, so you go to like divorce attorneys and
teach that. Workers. Nobody said that.
Hack into their client list.
That's me adding my interpretation. But they will say the people most likely to change religions who are going to be interested are somebody who has recently gotten married, had a child, had a death in the family, changed jobs, or moved to a new city. And in each one of those things...
Drug addicts, I think, are good.
Drug addicts, yeah, not as...
prisoners.
They tend to be...
No, they all find, like, the Nation of Islam.
That's true. Yeah.
No,
push-ups and get a Bible. And then they...
No, that's a good point with prisoners, actually. I love Kurt Vonnegut.
German prisoners.
Kurt Vonnegut used to say, I don't think he was religious at all. He was probably an atheist. But prisoners would write to him all the time and say, what should I do with my life? What should I do when I get out? And he would always tell people, join a church.
Yeah.
And even if you are not that religious, I mean, there's something about, it's an automatic community where people are generally interested in you and are going to help you out, especially drug addicts, prisoners, people getting their life back on track. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of positives.
I mean,
there.
It's a pretty good path. Like, it's like, here's a set of guidelines or whatever.
Yeah.
And here's a bunch of people who are going to help you.
Yeah.
And it's free.
We've got to get, like, a church just to get into the podcast, because then if one person likes it,
I'm working on it. Yeah. I'm getting my people in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Well, yeah, go. Yeah.
So, what's it like? Like your first day, what is it like? You just aimlessly walk through neighborhoods and knock on doors, or like you ride around on the bikes, or like with the suit, or what do you do? Like, how does it start? How do you just like hit the ground?
After the language training 2 months, you show up and you're assigned to a companion, somebody who's already been there, and he trains you. And basically, your day is pretty regimented. You wake up, I think it was 6:30. You wake up at 6:30 and you do. You study the language, you study the doctrine, you might do some exercise, you do some other things and planning for the day. And then the rest of the day is going out looking for people or teaching. It's a combination of, it might be knocking on doors, getting referrals from, there are a lot of Mormon visitor centers around the world. Like if you go to Temple Square in Salt Lake, people will fill out like a referral that they'd be interested in learning more. A lot of Germans go to Utah. It's really big, especially southern Utah. And but they end up at a tourism center, and they fill out a referral, and we show up, and we would teach them.
So you get a list of leads, basically.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You get the Glengarry leads?
I need the Temple Square leads. Yes. They're holding back on me.
Yeah. So you get...
Or you
so
just look for people who look lost and need direction in life, and you're like, that person, look in the eye. I know it.
So the temple sends you leads, and so like they'll give you leads in your neighborhood or your city, or how does that work?
Yeah, they would give leads that would come back to like our address, and it would be, we would show up and either on the door or we would, if there's a phone number, we would call. We'd get leads. A lot of members would maybe recommend a friend who is interested in learning more. So it would be a combination of that, but we would also spend a lot of time doing service work.
Cool.
Yeah, a certain amount of time. We'd either be teaching English to migrants or helping, like, asylum seekers with paperwork, cleaning up. I remember working at a homeless shelter for a long time, cleaning up graffiti, you know, just general service stuff.
And
how do Europeans take, in general, to a religion that began in America? I feel like are they more hostile to it, or are they just like, I'm just curious, like,
how
are you received?
Yeah, like I understand how Germans, like the idea of Mormonism moving over to Europe, I find.
Was there already a church in your neighborhood when you got there, or were you guys starting from scratch?
Yeah, there was already a church. There are places in the world where missionaries show up and there's no church, like they're establishing, foundation to build a church or to get, like, rent a space. But in Germany, the church had a long history. It's not really that strong compared to other places. Like, Germans in general are not very religious. They don't, you know, people are brought up with either, you know, they're either Catholic or Protestant and are brought up in like whatever church you were when you were a kid, but they're not religious. They'll go on Easter and Christmas.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, nobody's that religious. I would say actually the most success was typically with migrants. There was a lot of, you know, Germany had a big population of Kazakhstani people. These were ethnic Germans who'd been carried off by the Russians after the war, and they were now being brought back, like they were allowed to come back to Germany. And they only spoke really Russian, didn't speak much German, but they were very welcoming people. They would always open the door, and even if they weren't interested, you know, they'd offer us tea and we'd visit and you'd hear their story, always very interesting. So I spent a lot of time with Kazakhstanis, spent a lot of time, there's a very big Turkish population. I spent a lot of time with African migrants, asylum seekers, in particular Ghana, Nigeria, and usually had just harrowing stories of, you know, they were seeking asylum because they were fleeing some sort of political thing where their dad had been killed by the neighboring party and they had to flee the village. And then a lot of Middle Eastern, you know, a lot of Iraqis, a lot of Iranians, and all had really
what year was this when you were there?
97 to 99.
Now the missionaries, it probably teach you don't call or refer to their countries as shitholes or anything, right? It's not. or do you to like lower their? Like I'm trying to.
Oh, to nag them?
Yeah. No, I don't know.
I think we would. Yeah, the German would be Drecklock.
Oh, okay. Drecklock.
I actually heard. I was listening to German news the other day, and they described. They were telling the story of Trump calling. That shithole says Dreckhole.
Really?
I think that's what they said, yeah. Or Dreckhole.
I learned some German.
So you still speak German?
Yeah. Yeah, I still go to a fair amount of... just Friday, I went to a board game night in German.
Whoa. Wow.
It's actually more fun, like, to practice where you're doing an activity, like going and playing. Though it's tough to have somebody explain the rules to Settlers of Catan in German.
In German?
Yeah.
So, Who did you convert anybody specifically?
Yeah, I did. Probably.
Does that feel really good? Because like, what percentage of it is just like negative reactions versus positive to you? Like, is it just like
it's probably like anything selling, right? Where
you just get really down?
It's overwhelmingly negative.
Yeah,
and I would say for me.
I'm pretty hostile to people who try to talk to me in the street.
I know. I don't. That's why I would never be a good salesman. Because whenever when I try to like, if I really have something that I'm trying to sell that I believe in, and people just like blow me off, I just get pissed at them. I'm like, you're an idiot.
Yeah. A lot of missionaries took it hard. It was tough for them, and it's tough as well. Maybe you'd be different if you came to it a little when you were a little older, but to be just right out of high school, you're like 19.
I can't imagine this generation, like millennials, who they're told yes on everything, right, and then all of a sudden they go, it's probably good
for
them.
Pay off people to say pretend who are already in the church. Yeah. So, just build their confidence.
Pretend converts. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You were saying.
Well, no, it is, I think, very isolating to go and to have, you know, especially when you meet people your own age, and you're very, you seem very uncool. You know, you're wearing these suits and you're talking to them about religion. You got all these rules of stuff that you can't do. Even when people are nice to you and not interested in religion but invite you to something, you know, you usually can't. So I think a lot of missionaries took it hard. For some reason, I didn't mind it. I think there's something about speaking a foreign language that, for me, you kind of like escape into a different personality. Like, I didn't take it seriously. You know, you're meeting Germans that you're never going to see again. You're speaking. It's like just practicing the language was fun. And so even if you go out every day and people are saying no, or just, you know, you're having discussions with people, you're still, you know, learning the language. It was actually, and if you've ever studied another language, like studying Chinese, it was really hard to find opportunities to practice. But in German, like, I'd be out 12 hours a day.
You have to.
And got really good really quickly, yeah.
Did it ever get aggressive? You ever feel in danger?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. What happened?
Well, I've had, you know, people... Germany has a very liberal welfare system, and because of that, they...
We're all middle, so we feel your pain.
There are a lot of very crazy people on the street, people who don't have to work and people who are just in the downtown area. Oh. And so if you're out there, like, you just interact, you see the same people all the time. Because as a missionary, you're out all the time and you see the same kind of crazy people. And over time, yeah, there'd be people in a city who just didn't like you and they would aggressively, you know, cause problems for you. But yeah, I've had somebody pull a gun on me before.
Really?
Which, no, they didn't pull a gun. They pulled up a shirt to show that they had a gun. And
I'll count that. Yeah, because they didn't have guns.
That counts as pulling a gun if you.
Yeah, I wondered about that as well. I don't know where he got a gun in Germany.
But he pulled a gun because of you were. He didn't want you to talk to him about.
Yeah,
about the Church of Latter-day Saints.
We'd only been talking like 10 seconds, and he's like, you know, I don't want to hear it. I mean it. And he wasn't. Yeah.
I don't understand people who they almost feel like proud that they're so mean to like Jehovah's Witnesses or whoever. Like, you can just say no and keep going with your life, you know?
Yeah.
Or like take it. You can take, if someone's like, here's a thing. Like,
I take things for like any sort of like thing when you got the subway, any flyer anyone's handing me. If it's cold out, I feel bad. I take it now.
I know. Well,
but if they try to talking to me, I can get pretty.
If they come to your door, every once in a while we would have Jehovah's Witnesses when I was a kid come to our house, and you just, whatever, you just like, yeah, thank you, have a good day.
Yeah.
And you keep going. Like, I don't know what it is in like.
Yeah,
some
but that's because you're like you're the majority, so Jews get hostile.
Oh, Jews get. I don't understand the idea of getting hot. Like, go like, and then people will brag about it later. They're like, I told this Jehovah's Witness guy to go fuck himself.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, why is that a positive? I don't see. They're not doing anything. They're not trying to harm you. They literally, whatever they believe, they think they're like helping you. So like, okay, cool, thanks. And
right. I don't know. Like, I'm very nice. I've talked about on the podcast. We have this church in our neighborhood now that's like very like passively like trying to take over.
Oh, okay.
They like clean. They like do, like our neighbors. There's no. They clean the neighborhood.
They
run
carnivals. They do all these terrible things like cleaning.
They do all
the
these great things. So I'm really nice to them actually, and I don't. And I was going to bring – Mel brings it up right now because maybe you can help me. What do I do? I just got an email. I'm on their email list, and they have a Little League baseball.
Oh.
Is this a trap? Like, if I sign Teddy up, am I joining this church, like, by the end of the season? They're running a Little League baseball league?
I mean, that is a way to gain members. I mean – There are things
Teddy
where...
There you go, but he'll be a killer baseball player.
It'd be good for the pot if I joined a church in the middle of the...
Sandy Koufax.
Like, as a kid, like, in Mormonism, like, we would play church basketball, and we would invite friends who weren't Mormons. And we honestly, we didn't need them. But also, it was a way to get people... You know,
to get
church.
Him in?
Yeah, we had church dances. We had church sports. We had, like, sometimes we were all in the Boy Scouts. And, yeah, you'd be occasional, you know, people who weren't members would come.
Yeah, you reel them in. Can I ask a question? Why do this is a specific Mormon question, but why do Mormon churches always have carpeted basketball courts?
Wait, what? They do?
Yeah, every basketball court is carpet.
How do you play basketball on a carpet?
Because it bounces. Oh, it's like this really thick, short carpet that you can bounce. Is that the case also in Utah or just California Mormons? California Mormons play basketball, and I feel like it hurt them when they went to go play high school basketball because they weren't used to wood and they all couldn't make the team.
I wonder why Sean Bradley cannot stay healthy in the NBA.
They're different sized churches.
Rugburn.
So there are a bunch of, you know, like the smaller churches, but then there'll be all of those are under like a stake center. And the stake center usually has a wooden court, and it's usually really nice. It has a wooden court with the glass backboards, and it has, like, usually electronic scoreboard. But then the regional, like the smaller churches, they have the carpet, and, you know, it's not a full court either. It's a little bit shorter than the regulation size, and it's got carpet. And I think that's mostly because it doubles most of the time as something else. You know, it's only used for basketball every once in a while.
I was assuming it was like a basketball thing. Like it was some way better training technique or something.
They thought of it.
No, they use it for overflow for the rest of the like the main chapel. They have meetings in there. It's, you know, where all the, you know, the women's activities will usually set up tables in there. It's where they have dinners.
No, they just have a healthy lifestyle. That's the training activity.
Here's another thing I would tell you, that whenever I go home, whenever you see Mormons I grew up with, they all are like, they look like the dudes are like super handsome. The women are beautiful because they've never drinking alcohol or smoked a cigarette in their life.
I went to Sundance, the film festival, once in Utah.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating, the juxtaposition, because it's like all the bouncers outside. It's like they have these nightclubs open for like the week. And all the bouncers and like people running the doors are like douchebags from LA and New York.
Yeah.
And it's just that. And then you walk in and it's all these like the locally hired like bartenders.
Yeah.
And they're all blonde and like they all look so young. But they're not that young. They actually, this is what happens when you have a clean lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's like, people, and they're so nice. Yeah, there's a wholesome lifestyle. People don't drink or smoke. And if you go to BYU, like everybody is just kind of clean cut and healthy.
So you couldn't drink you didn't drink in Germany then?
Didn't drink, didn't smoke.
Oh, yeah. What were the rules? My friend's little brother told me that you cannot swim in bodies of water. Is that true?
What else do you swim in?
So just, as a missionary, you have stricter rules than the rest of the church has. But during your mission, you can't go swimming. But it's also partly, I mean, as a missionary, you're not allowed to date. You're not allowed to smoke. You're never allowed to smoke or drink. But you can't watch any movies. You can't watch TV. You can't listen to music. It's basically like this cloister experience. You can't contact your family. You can only write letters. You can talk to them on the phone on Christmas and Mother's Day. That's it.
What?
Mother's Day?
Yeah.
What about Father's Day?
Not Father's
Day.
Whoa! That's so sexist.
Whoa, me too.
What about their birthday?
Nope.
Oh.
Wait, wait. Okay, so wait, why the can't contact your family? Is that like a to try to indoctrinate you even, or what? Even
no,
more?
No, I think it was just to keep you focused. It's changed now, where with technology, like email wasn't really in common use when I went. Like now, I've got a nephew who's in Mexico, and he sends an email every week. Like, I think he has access not constantly to the internet, but he has like once a week he'll exchange emails with everybody.
Shout out if he's listening to the pod.
Yeah. Have to have a follow up with him one day.
Has the Book of Mormon caught up with podcasting for the rules?
Yeah, what's the podcast rule? Or NSYNC?
NSYNC.
I doubt you're able to use a podcast.
Probably can't NSYNC.
No. So, there's no podcasts, no music.
A life
no,
without podcasts.
And to be honest,
No music. And this is all, you think it's all to keep you focused, or are there specific reasons?
I think it's
that?
To keep you focused, and it was effective. It really, I would say, you know, you wouldn't choose it, but at the same time, once you go through something that's kind of like an intense focus experience. I remember people talking to a guy who lived who was Russian, and he talked about serving like a 2-year, like everybody being conscripted into the army and having to serve for 2 years. And our experience was similar in a lot of ways, where he would say it was really hard. You weren't allowed to do all these things you wanted to do, but you formed these really intense connections with everybody that you were out there with. You were able to really clear your head from distraction, decide what you wanted to do with the rest of your life. And I do think of it in terms of, I wasn't allowed to do all these things, but it was the first time I like intensely studied something. Like I learned the language really well. And I also found, kind of direction more with what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. You form such intense connections with the other missionaries that are out there kind of going through the same experience. And I there aren't that many opportunities. You know, now people are so distracted and overwhelmed with music and television and devices that they pay a ton of money to go to India for a month and have any of those distractions.
You could just do it. You could do that for it. Come to Mormonism.
Just become a missionary.
Yeah. I mean, how much would you give to not have to reply to any emails or talk to your family for like even a month?
I mean, it'd be great. I don't think my wife would be happy about it, but or my parents. But you're right. Like it's to be able to completely focus. Did you find you were like super productive? I feel like you could write a book or two during that time.
So productive, like so efficient.
It's like going to prison, sort of.
My time.
Yeah, except with less sex.
All the.
I imagine.
Ding, 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 Kaplan.
Otherwise, similar to prison. I mean, you do have a male companion.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
Oh yeah. See, there you go.
Nothing goes on
That's
there.
That's not illegal. Probably. Yeah.
You can shower with more.
You just can't swim.
Yeah.
Wait. Why can't
you sing in the shower?
Is why can't music? You swim?
The swimming thing. I think that it seems more than it really is there. It's just basically, if you swim and you're at a swimsuit and like at the beach or something, it's what would be the reason for that? You're working all of the time. You're not doing anything socially. So to go to a beach is just one of those things that kind of seems like a temptation. You're there. Women are in swimsuits. You're not allowed to
date. What if you're trying to convert or talk to them?
Would be a nice cover.
That's true. Yeah. That's what I would say.
That would be my move.
No, I was in Fort Lauderdale.
Guys.
I was at Chili Willy's trying to convert these chicks.
A great book to read on the beach is...
Yeah. It is. The Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there was much... to that, but
the swimming part,
yeah, it didn't come up that often. I was in Germany, it wasn't like there were beaches everywhere.
Yeah, so are you still in touch with the people you were on the mission with?
Not that much. I would have been more, you know, I left like mid to late 20s. I eventually left, and you know, you don't have as much in common. I really still love those people and, you know, have a great connection with them, but at the same time, people in Mormonism, like, once you leave. There is a lot of focus on trying to bring you back. So it's pretty hard to have, it's difficult to have a relationship with people who are kind of looking for an in to bring you back and to constantly.
Feels like there might be an ulterior motive to inviting you to the basketball game.
Well, yeah, and there's also, like, I know the psychology of Mormons. And there is something a little negative in the idea that, just like I said about like looking for people, like people will change their lives when something big has happened. Like if you catch up with somebody and they know that you're not active, that you're no longer in Mormonism, they won't admit this, but they're kind of looking for bad things to happen to you to bring you back to Mormonism. Right. And it's this popular idea that if you have left... that you will have something will humble you. Nobody could be happy outside of Mormonism. And so people, even family, are really like looking for these windows of bad luck or misfortune to befall you so they can find a window to bring you back, you know? So it is, it's hard to be friends with people who want your life to go poorly.
Who wishing you ill will.
You can't cross the road with them. I mean,
yeah, I know.
So when did you leave the church then? Was it right?
It was shortly after moving to China. It was like a couple
China
years
will do it.
In. Yeah.
Did you go to a Mormon church in China? Or can you even talk about that?
Yeah, I went to a Mormon church there. That was
That's illegal, right?
It's not illegal. It's one of those things in China that falls in a gray area that they know it goes on, but you know, Mormonism and Western religions are generally influential where they can go in and find loopholes where the government will allow you to do it. So you can not have a church, but you can meet in a member's home. So the church just basically bought a huge building, had a member stay in the top floor of the building, and then it turns into a church, you know, at night and on the weekends, and it falls within the rules, and the government knows that it's happening. We were pretty strict about when Chinese people show up, like, you have to have a foreign passport to attend.
Yeah, that's a Chinese government rule.
Yeah, there was a Chinese church as well, a lot of Taiwanese people. And occasionally, if somebody like a Chinese citizen leaves, studies in America, and joins Mormonism and comes back, they could attend the Chinese church there. But there's no proselyting at all. Like, nobody could show up and be just a Chinese person without a foreign passport and go where everybody gets in trouble.
So would you, ultimately, was it a good experience, the mission?
Yeah.
Even though you're not connected to the church anymore? Would you still like your kids, or would you recommend people doing this?
Well, it's, you know, in hindsight, I wouldn't recommend necessarily somebody who hasn't done it, but I don't have any regrets in doing it.
Got it.
And it's one of those things where I think everybody looks back at childhood and can find grievances and say, you know, I wish I hadn't done this or that, but, you know, I left and it wasn't for me. But at the same time, I had graduated. I went to BYU as well. By the time I'd left, there's such a focus on responsibility and training people for leadership that all growing up, like I was in, you know, I ran all sorts of different youth organizations and got all this leadership and management experience, really. And later on, I went to German University after, you know, doing my bachelor's. And I feel like I got a lot out of it as far as the language, as far as like a career path, as far as by the time I'd left, you know, I had a pretty good career. And if I look back at it and said I wish I hadn't, you know, had done something else, I don't know where I would have been.
Yeah.
It's a very impressive thing for the resume. If I met someone who can go 2 years without doing any of those things.
I feel like they should publicize more. Yeah.
Did Mitt Romney do that?
I don't know.
He did. Mitt Romney was in France.
He did a mission.
That's very impressive. Like, could Donald Trump go one day?
No, I mean, absolutely not. People, I think they're probably wishing bad things upon him.
They might join the church.
To help him become a Mormon. I mean, yeah.
Well, Mormons are very, like, if you look at different careers, pretty high achievers in business and government.
Because there's no temptation. I mean, there's temptation, but you don't give in to it.
It's kind
like
of
booze isn't setting anybody back, right?
I think that's part of it. I think,
you gotta join.
Moving the family to, yeah. These kids are like, they can't not use the iPad for like one day. They can't go that way. Like,
send your 5-year-old on a mission.
He was playing Sonic the Hedgehog all morning. Anyway.
Well, I did, like at BYU, I did, you know, I was in the business management and finance program, and it was like a heavily recruited program. All the, you know, big five accounting firms and finance firms came. And the thing is, you've got a bunch of young people who spent 2 years as missionaries, and it's not just the process, like teaching people, but you manage a budget, you're in charge of, like, you do your own visas, you do, like, you're in leadership positions where, like, I was eventually responsible for, like, 150, 200 missionaries, and there's a budget, there's a fleet of cars, there's a fleet of apartments that you're responsible for maintaining. Like, the missionaries do all of it. And then you get back and you've had this incredible management experience. And then...
But you don't know who, like, Green Day is.
Yeah, it turns out that employers are way more interested in the management part than your ability to quote pop culture.
Like, were you, like, completely lost in America when you came back? Because you hadn't got anything for 2 years.
You know what? I was, but that was actually really fun as well. Because you come back, and generally, I think most movies are kind of shitty. But when you haven't seen any movies for 2 years, then it piles up like a lot of movies to go see, like all these award winner movies. And it's like, I haven't seen Saving Private Ryan. I haven't seen Titanic. I haven't seen like everybody was
so excited to get out of seeing that movie.
People were so crazy about Titanic when I was over there. And I'm like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, it got really big. It was huge in China. Remember all the kids? I taught English the first year I was there. All the kids were named either Jack or Rose.
Amazing.
All the Chinese kids named themselves
that.
That's
true. I did meet a lot of Jacks.
Yeah. Is Jimmer's Mormon, right?
Oh, he's big time Mormon.
So is that going to lead to a Chinese explosion of Mormonism? Because he's like the greatest basketball player over there now.
That's true. And he's going to be the biggest converter of all time.
I do remember my... my nephew just got a like Jimmer Fredette in Chinese, like his Chinese jersey. Like,
I almost bought it
on this side.
Maybe I'll buy it this year. Do you want one?
Yeah,
I'm gonna go to a game next month.
I should
get his Jimmer jersey.
That should be the official jersey of the pod.
Yeah, it should be. We're big Jimmer fans.
Yeah,
we are.
I might convert.
Teach me how to Jimmer.
If he keeps scoring 50 point games,
I know. Yeah, so I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go on this trip. I'm gonna be in Shanghai. I'll get you some Jimmer jerseys.
Nice.
We'll get Jimmer jerseys.
He's coming back.
Cool, Paul. Well, we have I have a million more questions to ask you, but we got to get to the news. We got to keep this train moving.
All right.
So you stick around for a minute.
Yeah.
We'll do the news.
All right. Play the music.
Play the music.
We got old news wrapped up in old
All right, we're back with the news. Before the news, I thought of more questions while we were just away. We didn't get to, what is it? So when you actually do convert someone, or you bring someone into more, what is it called, converting them, or what do you call it?
Yeah, conversion, yeah.
How does that feel after all that negative, like, feedback? Does it just feel, like, amazing?
Yeah, it feels validating. I think it's the, you know, for people to join in to say that their lives have changed or that they found a community to be. And I think in particular in Germany, people are just generally not that friendly. Not the way that, you know, Americans are just so friendly. Particularly I grew up in the West where everybody knows their neighbor. Somebody new moves in and you take them a casserole. Offer to watch their kids or whatever. People are just friendly. You wave at people you don't know as you're driving past. And in Germany, I would meet people all the time where I would say, people didn't know their neighbors. They would have lived in the same apartment for like 30 years and not know the neighbor who lived directly across from them for 30 years.
That's like New York, right?
Yeah, I mean, if someone brought a casserole over, I would...
Although I do know
throw
my
it
name,
out, I wouldn't trust it.
Yeah. and so for me, outside of the whole religious element, I did like people were really, I think their lives changed from finding a community of friendly people.
Oh, that's interesting.
They came and, you know, they came to church and whether, you know, I think some people joined because they believed the message and they found something there. But I think also people joined because they went somewhere where everybody smiled and was happy to see them and invite them to activities and helped them when they moved and watched their kids and were generally, you know, interested in their well-being. And people got a lot out of that. And to see, you know, people would express that they'd found a new community, a family, that was positive for them.
And then what's the step? Like once they say like, okay, I'm in. Like, you got me, whatever. What do you, like, then baptize them, or what happens?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, somebody would. So,
is it different than I don't know, is it like baptism, you going underwater or something?
Yeah.
The churches I grew up in, which is like mainline Protestant churches, Methodist, Presbyterian, you just, like, take a little water out of, like, a cup and, like, sprinkle it on the head. But it's usually a baby.
Right.
But I've also seen, do you, like, dunk them?
The dunk underwater
sometimes
thing.
They dunk them in a river.
They dunk them, yeah. Yeah, in Mormonism, there is usually, you are baptized, like you have to go completely under the water, not just the sprinkling. And people also, if they came from another church, they'd be like, oh, I've been baptized already. But in Mormonism, it's like you specifically have to be baptized into Mormonism.
Yeah.
So
your baptism didn't count.
It's a new ball game.
Yeah, yeah, so
you got a full underwater.
Before somebody can join, they've changed it since, but at the time I was a missionary, we had six specific, we call them discussions. And you go through each of those discussions and we answer their questions and whether they believe and understand, accept these things. It was partly about them then reading the Book of Mormon and establishing steps towards like all six, like what are the basic, what's the church about? What does it believe? And then also committing them to, like, if you join, there are going to be some things that are going to be difficult. It means you got to give up smoking. You got to give up drinking. You Mormons don't have sex before marriage. That was a tough one, especially for someone who, you know, people who you might
be already having sex with in a relationship.
Those Kazakhstanis.
Well, that was complicated because you could meet people who were like a couple living together.
Right.
And they weren't married.
So
and
like, you're like,
this is going to be complicated.
Yeah, this could be an issue.
So if they accept all those things, then you commit them to being baptized. And the process is pretty simple after that.
Every religion, they all agree on no sex before marriage. It's like the one thing every religion agrees on, right? Is there one religion that doesn't into that?
I think, what was the one in Waco, Texas? David Koresh? He was very pro.
Sex with him.
He could, sex with him before marriage was fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. You got to get married. I don't. Okay, should we get to the news?
Yes. It's a
weird lesson.
That's the good place to end. All right. So here's what I did for the news. I looked up. These are weird facts about Germany. I want to see if they're actually true. So there's a little bit in different news. These aren't like news stories. These are just facts about Germany. Okay.
Facts about Germany. All right.
The first one. I feel like both of you might have an opinion on this because you both had kids. The Schulutut. What's that? How do you say that word? Paul?
Schultüte.
The Schul. I wasn't too far off, Cap. The Schultüte is a tradition that dates back to the 1800s and gives where you give toys. You give kids toys when they enter school to celebrate the seriousness of life. They give the kids, these days, it's not unlikely for kids to get video games and cell phones into these cones. They make a cone, right, out of like paper mache.
Yeah, it looks like a funnel, and it's got a, you just put stuff in, and it's got a like little tissue thing at the top to, you know,
give it
keep
to kids
in.
Every time they start school.
No, I don't
year,
think
it,
I think it's just your very first
kindergarten.
Year.
Yeah, or first grade, whatever. The beginning, like your first year of school, so the kid isn't sad that he has a serious life now where he's got to be painting and everything in kindergarten, eating clay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to talk about this at some point of all the books that Teddy's been reading my son. Yeah. He takes him out of the kindergarten. And one of the books he brought home was a book about Germany.
Okay.
His big takeaway from this book about Germany was that kids in Germany go to school 6 days a week.
They do?
I don't think that's...
Okay, well, the book was written in, like, 1994 as a report of...
Teddy's funny because he'll read, like, a whole book and just pull one fact.
So he brings it up all the time. Like, he's like, what's today? I'm like, it's Saturday. And he starts laughing. Yeah, Germany, they're in school today. In Germany, I don't want to ever move to Germany. I don't want to go to school. But if I tell him you get video games and
you get a paper mache cone full of video games and cell phones.
I mean, it's like a marshmallow test. Would you trade, like, all right, I'm going to give you these video games today, but now you're signing up for 6 days of school this week. I don't know.
And candy, I think. Yeah. I think he would take it short term. Kids, I don't know about Teddy, but kids seem to like whatever they get in the short term.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But you're saying that's over now.
Oh, I don't recall if that must have been a really long time ago. Germans are actually the most efficient of any place I've lived. Like, they take a lot of holidays, and they're not big on this idea like Americans where it's like, I prove myself by working 10, 11, 12 hours. Right. They're really big on, like, people come in, you do your work, and then you leave. And they get it done. They don't put in, like, lots of extra hours.
That's why kindergarten's so serious for these kids.
They're efficient. They go
in. Seriousness.
They learn what you need to learn. Yeah. You learn your arithmetic and get home.
They eat crayons and they go home.
The kids just dismiss themselves. Like, I learned enough today. I'm out.
I remember I did, I was working at the embassy in Berlin, and I was trying to make, like, a good impression. I showed up, like, half an hour before everyone, like, half an hour afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
And after, like, two, three months.
Yeah.
Yeah, after two, 3 months, someone was like, why can't you get your work done in the allotted time?
Oh, really?
That's why they don't like Jerk. He works too much on his... No.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just efficient. They sit down. They're just... There's a really great work-life balance there where everybody just spends time outdoors. They have, like, a healthy lunch. They sit down at work, and nobody makes chit-chat around the water cooler at all. They show up, they do their work, and they leave.
All my best bits are tested out of the water cooler.
I know.
I couldn't do this podcast if I didn't test things out of the water cooler at work.
How do they know what happened in the game?
Yeah.
But that's interesting. Well, it's very like the tech world, I think, is kind of moving that way in America where, like, you kind of set your own hours. You take vacation when you want. That's what they're doing.
But
it's
they
more
also
of a
they have like gourmet lunches catered, and they like take a slide to
work.
Right,
but it's a more of like a modern way. I didn't realize it was German. Like, because like the older, like more corporate places in America are still like, you got to be in at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m., whatever your time is. And
it's not supposed to be fun. Yeah, you sit in your cubicle, pound it out.
Yeah, but it mostly shows, like studies will show, like you get most of your work done. If you're in an office where you're there from like 8:30 to 5:30, your brain, your energy, it's all gone by lunch. Like, you get everything you're going to get done in the first half of the day. To make you sit there, like there's a like decreasing returns. In Germans, they get like 25 federal holidays, like 25 paid vacation
days. Didn't they just cut the work week to 28 hours or something or was proposed?
I think the French did that. I think they tried to do like a 30-hour work week, something like that.
I would always peak. I would do nothing in the morning when I was at an office job, and then I would peak at like 4:30 in the afternoon because that's when I was like, oh, wait, it's almost over. Like, I got to do all this stuff. I didn't do it all.
Right.
So I do all my work from like 4 to 5 and then go home.
That's efficient.
It worked. Yeah. Okay, next fact. Okay, the government can and will reject weird baby names.
Yes.
You know that?
I love that. I love that they do that.
According to German law, a person's gender must be obvious by their first name.
Whoa, that is not PC.
All right.
They also have to... you can't make up a name in Germany.
Like it has to be on like in a book?
Yeah,
like in
it
a
has
baby
to
book?
Be an existing name. You have to prove that somebody already has it, and it has to be gender specific.
I wonder if Turner would work.
Well, you...
Wait, what about like Irish guys? Like, I have a friend named Shannon. He's a guy, but he's Irish.
Right, but some names are both.
I don't know how they deal with like immigrants coming in with different names, because Germans are very particular about... It'll sound like that is just a gender issue, but it's also like a phonetic issue. People just deciding that your name... You know, you read someone's name, they tell you, no, actually, it's pronounced this way, just because their mom made up some spelling.
Those people were the worst.
Yeah. So for them... like phonetics, they're really particular on their language. Like there's an actual book called The Duden, which is like all the rules of the language, which makes it great if you're learning the language. You study it and the rules are rules. Like American phonetics are all messed up. Like yeah. if you try and teach English, it makes no sense. Like you have to memorize all these exceptions. But in Germany, there aren't.
So everything has to fit in.
So yeah. are there examples of names they haven't, they just reject? Or like, because I'm just curious. Like in New York, in America, everyone's really into like, no one uses a normal name anymore. Like there's yeah. no Michaels in like my kids' schools.
What are the kids' names?
They're like, you know, everything's like Hudson or...
Brooklyn, isn't that
it's
one?
Like, it's not like yeah. it's not like Max. It'd be Maximilian or like, they're like Brooklyn or like... Yeah, there's just always like these names that like they get trendy.
I always thought a good name would be Maxibillion.
Maxibillion would be a great name, but like, no, there's just like, there's nobody named like. Well, Turner could be that. Could be that.
Turner's out. Borderline.
But I wonder if in Germany they protest and they have like they make things that are just like just on the edge.
They don't have any on there. I mean, I feel like none of my Chinese students or no one I worked with in China would ever like. I work Echo, yeah. Swallow.
I've had a chlorophyll.
Chlorophyll. I had a guy named Beer. In a meeting one time, and he said he picked it because he likes beer.
I had a driver named Seabass.
There you go.
But in his defense, I gave him that name.
Wait, you named Chlorophyll? Wait, what? Go back to that.
There's really someone named Chlorophyll?
I knew a Chlorophyll. I knew a... I knew a doctor named Handsome Dong.
Handsome Dong?
That's pretty good.
It sounds made up, but it's... Yeah.
I worked with a girl named Swallow, and her last name was Wong.
Well,
I'm
really?
Not even kidding. Yeah. And she said, I asked her why, because it said it on her like nameplate in the cubicle. And I was like, oh, your name's Swallow. How'd you pick it? And she's like, oh, I love the bird.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I met a.
And her last name was W-A-N-G.
She didn't get the.
She did not get
maybe
it.
She did.
I should share.
Maybe she did.
I once did a timeout column that was all about just all the names and where it comes from and all the worst names that I've heard. I once met a woman named Titty.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
How many like hundreds. Like how? Like what year will it be okay in Germany for like the name Adolf? Like where does it? Like I'm just like because you know like that.
Is that still not okay?
I'm sure. Is there anybody named like nobody would name their kid? I'm sure.
I don't think.
I know in America nobody like it was like a popular name and then just like disappeared.
Yeah.
It was like it literally felt there was like a there's a great article I read once on like name trends.
Adolf.
And how, like there's been other examples of names that have fallen off a cliff. That was the most extreme one.
I would imagine that's the most extreme. Pol Pot, is that still up there?
Yeah.
That's making a comeback. All right, that's our podcast. Paul Johnson, thanks for doing it.
Thanks for having me.
Cap, what should we do?
I'm going to go play some German board games.
Going to play German Settlers.
And then I'm going to get lost.
Get lost.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.